Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 251 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return this week for a little bit of a different podcast. Yes, if you watched our last week's podcast where we went through and we ranked all of the rookie drivers to help us celebrate 1k subs on the channel, we have decided to do a 1k Q&A. Now, I think I did one of these when my personal channel hit 1k subscribers, Jamie, many, many years ago.
Have you ever done a Q&A? Questions.
You did, yeah.
Not on YouTube. I did a Twitter one, but I don't know why, because... Yeah, it was just...
Were you lonely one afternoon?
I think I was on a long car journey when I was a passenger, so I do remember that. I never got 1k subs on my own channel, so never got the opportunity.
We're still trying to get to... It is mad to think that this is your most subscribed YouTube channel.
It is.
That's quite insane, actually. We're going to try and get the personal... If you actually upload it again, you could get to 1k easily.
I'm not going to upload again.
No, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, no, obviously, again, a massive thank you to all of you for the support on the podcast in recent times. Of course, we're not going to keep banging the drum about getting yourself subscribed or anything like that anymore. But of course, if you do enjoy them, you know, consider it. It is a great way to help us and support us as well, though. But we've got quite a few questions in from you guys. Luckily, this week, nothing particularly as exciting happened in the Formula One world either.
Confirmed.
Who Perez is going to Cadillac? That's been like basically confirmed for weeks. Yeah. Now we will just preface this. We're recording this on Friday morning, Friday the 15th. The podcast will probably go live on Monday the 18th. Yeah. So if something has happened either Friday or over the weekend, then we apologise in advance because Jamie183 is once again going on holiday, aren't you?
I am. Which leads us on to one of our questions, but we'll get to that later.
Where are you going on holiday this time? It's difficult to keep up.
I'm going to visit my parents who live in the south of France, in Cannes.
Jamie's a middle class man with his parents living in the French Riviera.
I grew up in working class South Yorkshire, and then they got a job on the south coast of France. So what can I do?
Do you reckon, therefore, that someone else used to live on the French Riviera and now has a job
in South Yorkshire? South Yorkshire, possibly.
Like, do these things balance out?
That's a bad trade if they. But yes, I'm off on Sunday and I'll be back on Thursday. So this is why we're recording early. So yeah, we'll see if anything fun happens over the weekend. I would be surprised since we're midsummer break. But yeah, I'm going to visit Monaco while I'm there. So I'll be on the lookout for any F1 drivers.
Get us a track guide. Get us an if you spot an F1 driver, can you please just get them to film an intro for us? Because that would be incredible. they literally just have to say like. Welcome subscribe to Knowing Wheel or something. Yeah, that would be incredible, Jamie. That is your job.
Midsummer break. I would be amazed if any F1 drivers are actually in Monaco at this point because it.
No, most of them are.
I went last year.
When did you go though?
Mid August
in the
time.
Summer break. I was going to say my partner's friend went, and that must have been between Silverstone and Spa. I think she went on like the weekend between, and I think she saw Alonso, I think she saw Liam Lawson. She saw a few drive, not like loads,
yeah,
but she saw cool. like three or four.
I am yet to meet a driver in Monaco, but...
I'm pretty certain you have to spend a certain amount of days a year in Monaco as well for the tax advantages.
Yeah, you will. I think it's like 120 or something. It's quite a lot.
Yeah.
I did see Flavio Briatore when I was there, but not an F1 driver yet.
No, yet. I don't think he's ever going to be a Formula One driver,
well,
I hope.
Yeah, but I mean, I haven't met an F1 driver separate from Flavio Briatore.
Fair enough. Anyway, let's get into our questions then. As we said, a massive thank you to everybody for dropping us some questions, if you did. Of course, if you've got any more, if you forgot to ask us one last week, you can drop it down. We'll probably answer it in next week's show as well. But yeah, this is going to be like our 1K Q&A special. So our first one comes in then from Oscar Gray 155. He says, first of all, hi guys, love the podcast, keep it up. Jamie and I aren't going anywhere anytime soon. Apart from the Jamie going to the south of France. What was the greatest season this millennium in your opinion? And how did you guys meet? So I think we'll answer the simple one first. How did we meet? That was actually, wasn't it, Jamie, through an old F1 league, which I don't even know if they're still running anymore.
I think they
is
do.
Is AOR?
I think it does run, but not very popularly. So
AOR, Apex Online Racing, as it was known, We're not joking when we say this. It was by far and away the most popular F1 league.
Yeah.
Up until about F1 2018. It's bizarre, isn't it? You could do a whole video on its downfall. Because AOR was in the perfect position when F1 Esports became popular.
Yeah.
To absolutely make a killing. Like, they worked with F1 Esports.
I could make a video on it because I was in charge of it when it downfell.
Jamie was part of its downfall. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think I contributed to its downfall, but...
I think you did a little bit.
I probably didn't help it very much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you contributed more than you ever let on. But yeah, we basically both started playing F1 2016. Obviously, we hadn't met each other. We both signed up because it was the first time ever... They were kind of doing like a more rookie league.
Assist league, basically. Yeah.
Assist league, yeah. Basically. So like, you could have Racing Line, you could have ABS, you could have Traction Control. So yeah, we met through that. I was the official coordinator for it because I'd actually done some AOR racing beforehand. And I actually won that season.
You did, but I beat you in Australia and China. So here's a fun story for this. We did some pre-season races. I can't remember. One was in Baku. I don't remember where the other one was.
I think one was in Spain.
But Matt, you probably had about 400 or 500 subscribers at the time on your main channel.
Yeah.
Though you uploaded a video of what the Baku race in particular, I remember. And I was rubbish at the game. I hadn't owned an F1 game in 4 or 5 years.
I think we were all rubbish.
Yeah, it's true. True. But at one point, there was a safety car restart. I overtook you on the safety car restart. And I was watching that clip back for about 2 weeks before the season started. So I was like, that's sick, I'm in a YouTube video. So yeah, I was like, wow, this big YouTuber's on my league, 400 subs.
Yeah, no, it is mad, isn't it? Like, yeah. Cause
and then
was...
I beat you in China. I won that race and I've watched that back many times.
You still go on about it to this day.
I do.
It's incredible. I mean, that's mad, isn't it? Because that was 9 years ago now. Probably just over 9 years ago we started talking. Anyway, that was kind of obviously a long time before the podcast, a long time. That was basically like when I first started like doing YouTube in air quotes, like not even taking it seriously, just doing it for a bit of a laugh. Not at that point. I was still at secondary school at that point.
Oh yeah.
I just started going to college, I think, by the time we started that.
Crazy. And then we've only met twice in real life. And the first time.
We've only met each other twice in 9 years, IRL, which was, we went on holiday 2 years ago.
2023, yeah.
Yeah, 2023, and then we also met at the 2018 Belgian Grand Prix, which was more just per chance.
Yes, I think we were for both about half going. An hour or something. I was with my dad and you were with your dad.
So. I was with my dad, yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping, of course, we've said it many times before, but I'm hoping we obviously will start seeing each other a bit more in person in the future. But yeah, this is literally like one of the only kind of internet friendships I've had now for like more than...
Wow.
Like five. Well, yeah, I guess. Well, we've still got a group of us, haven't we? We've got probably about six or seven of us that still talk from that league nearly 10 years ago.
Crazy.
Which is kind of mad when you think about it.
Yeah. Every time I tell my real life friends about any of you lot, they're all like, are you going to get murdered when you meet them? And I'm like, no, I've met them many times.
it's mad, isn't it? Like, weirdly, though, most of you live in the north. Like, I'd say out of the 8 or 9 of us, probably 6 or 7 live in the north.
Yeah, exactly. So we have met
obviously
semi-regularly.
Yeah, you guys have met up a few more times, but for me, it's like a 4-hour trek to come up and see you. Which
I
is
see what we're worth,
Matt. Difficult.
I'm not going to take it personally.
Exactly. what was the greatest F1 season in this? So since 2000, then Jamie, I'm gonna let you answer this one first because there's a few in there.
There are. I think I can only really talk for the ones that I remember. Which we're probably talking 2008 onwards, maybe. Out of those, I mean, before that, there's not that many great seasons, to be honest.
2003,
I would go with 2012, personally. Obviously, 8 different winners, 7 in 7 races, 6 different teams winning a race, and you had a crazy title battle. The only thing that would have made it slightly better if Alonso managed to win, because I think he drove... to be fair, Alonso and Vettel both drove incredibly that season. But Alonso, that car was genuinely 4th or 3rd fastest throughout most of that season. And I'm not saying the Red Bull was the fastest car, because it kind of wasn't. But the fact that Alonso took it to the last laps of the last race was an incredible season for him.
Yeah. I mean, the Ferrari kind of was a bit slower than the Red Bull, wasn't it? But far more reliable. Yes. If I remember correctly, Ferrari didn't have a single mechanical failure that year.
No, Alonso had two DNFs, and they were both crashed.
Two DNFs. And both not his fault. Like, there was nothing he could do to avoid them. Like I said, 2012 is definitely going to be right up there. I think 2021, of course, has to be right up there. Everything comes back to 2021. 2003 deserves to be up there as well, because that season had so many storylines going on. A couple underrated ones. Obviously, 2010 as well, that four-way championship decider, I think, was incredible.
08 is up there.
08 as well. I was actually going to throw out there maybe 09, because just the way that season was so unpredictable.
It was a bit wild, wasn't it? But I guess by halfway through, you kind of knew who'd win it, or you likely.
Well, by about round four, you knew basically who was going to win it. I mean, it was such a messy championship by Brawl in the end, but of course they were limited what they could do. And then I'd argue as well, kind of 2020 is like a massively underrated season.
It is.
Just because there were so many great races, it was just the fact Lewis dominated.
It depends what you're looking for, really, because if you love F1 for the championship narrative, then the likes of 2010, 2012, 2021 are by far better than the likes of 2020 or 2019.
Yes.
But 19 and 20 had loads of great races individually. Like, in 2010,
exactly.
There were a handful of okay races, but most of them were really rubbish.
Yeah, 2010 was a year that is almost too fondly remembered.
The refueling era as well. Most races in the refueling era were boring as, if you watch them back now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the championship narratives were really good. So, depends what you want. I want a bit of both.
Exactly. So, if you had to go back, Jamie, you were only allowed to watch one Formula One season, which would it be? I even think, actually, when you're talking about, like, interest and mix-up, even 2024 was a pretty good season.
Yeah.
Again, 8 winners is pretty good going.
7 winners, wasn't it?
Oh no, Checo didn't win, Paris did he? Sorry, it was only 7, yeah. So if you had to go back and watch one season...
I would watch 2012. I know it's boring.
I think that's... I'm honestly tempted to side with you there. Except for, as a McLaren and a Lewis fan at that time, it was so painful. Because they completely threw away that champion. Like, they should have, at the very least, been in that fight.
Yeah, they really should have. Obviously, Hülkenberg's first major podium miss in Brazil. But that's all forgiven now.
Exactly. Old news at this point. So, great. Are we seriously saying great? See, actually, I think I'm going to say 2003. I'm going to say 2000. Because, obviously, we didn't really watch it at the time.
No.
Because we were 3 years old. I'm going to say V10s as well. You've got to love it.
Oh, the step noses instantly became memorable, even though they were ugly ads when they first came out.
Apart from a couple of them that were a bit botched, I didn't actually think they were too bad for the most part. Next up then, from Hero017, when did you become a Lewis fan? Was it as he came in just because you started taking a greater interest in the sport at the same time? For me, it was like Messi with football. I really started watching the sport when he was the new big star, so became a fan. And the same question for Jamie, is a resident Max Verstappen fan. Mm. And can we name one performance from Hamilton Verstappen that stands out for you in their early years?
Great question.
Go on then, Jamie. You first.
So for Max, it's actually an interesting one because obviously I'm not Dutch. I didn't just automatically like him when he joined. To be honest, when he joined, I was a Nico Rosberg fan. So... Max was
Jamie's always had a bad taste in Formula One drivers, ladies and gents. What can I say?
I found Max in 2016 really annoying because he was the one threatening Rosberg usually.
He was, yeah. He rattled Rosberg so many times that year.
That overtake at Abu Dhabi 2016 was incredible still to this day. I would say it was probably throughout 2018. I can't really pinpoint a time, but I think he was really unfairly treated at the start of 18. And then I don't think... Only 2019 onwards did I start going into races rooting for Verstappen. But what I do remember is Brazil 2018, which was the race where Ocon took him out a lap down. I remember being fuming about that. So I must have been a fan by that point.
Yeah.
But it was probably that. And it's more to do with the fact that Max is incredible. And he has that's a real turning point in his career around that time. When he shoved Ricciardo out the door. And then I think really went onto a higher level in 2019. And then
it's kind of 2018, I think, was kind of where he really started to get a stranglehold over the Red Bull team. You know, it was why Ricciardo left at the end of that year.
I never really warmed to Ferrari drivers generally. And the fact that Max was always the one annoying the Ferrari drivers went a long way. I loved his attitude. I loved his personality, his humour. So, yeah, I think it was throughout 2018, to be honest. And the one... I'm trying to pinpoint a race in that time. I mean, probably Brazil 2018, because he was going to win from fifth on the grid, wasn't he? And then Ocon took him out. So
yeah. No, very, very. And kind of, yeah, so it wasn't really for you day one, was it? Kind of became a fan of him. For me with Lewis, it was 2007 was like the first year I started watching Formula One. Like, it was kind of, you know, it's always when people go, I've been watching Formula One since I was 3 years old, going, there's no way a 3 year old would sit in front of the TV for 90 minutes, kind of without moving around and stuff. Like, by age seven, I think that's just about kind of possible. And it was kind of like my dad had already been watching it, you know, for many years, kind of in and out, I think. And then as I kind of, you know, when you're kind of at like age and you kind of latch on to something, you kind of get like your first real hobby or interest in something. That was kind of what it was for me. And it was obviously, you know, young British guy had sort of come in. Obviously was immediate, you know, kind of right at the front and obviously thrust into the limelight as well, and obviously just how good he was instantly, you know, despite obviously all the controversy that went on in 2008.
Which I'm sure you were aware of at 7 years old.
You've kind of got no idea of that going on behind the scenes, and it's so fascinating. I mean, even to this day, I was literally reading something yesterday, Jamie, about BMW with their KERS system in 2009. About when they almost killed one of their engineers because he got electrocuted.
Really?
Wow. It's stuff like that you just even learn about today. I mean, when it comes to kind of Hamilton, like a performance that stood out, of course, in the early years, of course, everybody's going to say Silverstone 2008. I still would argue, I think it was Fuji 07 is probably one of his most underrated drives of all time.
That
as well,
was
because
appalling.
That one, insane. Obviously, you know, in his rookie campaign still.
And the fact Alonso stacked it with a big championship rival. So
exactly.
Yeah, I think
exactly. So yeah. For me, Lewis, yeah, I've been a fan of since he came into sport. It's why I'm always so worried about when he does finally leave. Because obviously apart from one race in 2020, I've never known
That's
the sport without Lewis.
I've had so many favourite drivers over the years, it's crazy.
Exactly. And I've just had the one still. And I'm so worried that he's gonna retire at some point. And I know he will.
He will have to
but it's gonna be,
at some point, will he?
It's gonna be so weird then kind of not always having Lewis is like, you know, I've liked other drivers as well alongside him, but Lewis has always kind of been the constant for me.
I felt a bit like that at the start of 17 after Rosberg left and before I kind of was massive on Hülkenberg. And then again in 2020.
when Hülkenberg was gone.
Yeah.
Exactly. Next up then, Cherny 6094. What are your top five F1 championship years wins?
With a thorough explanation.
Justification. I said the best of why you've chosen the one season above all the others. That is a heavy question.
We kind of touched this earlier.
We've gone through most of them, haven't we? Because I think, generally speaking, modern F1 seasons are probably better to talk about this than older ones.
Well, simply because, I don't know about you, I've never watched a full season back from the 90s or before.
No, it's a bit more difficult. If we say a five between us, then are we saying 21, 12, 10, 3? What more you want to throw in there? Yeah, we throw 8 in, I suppose. 07 might have been a slightly more interesting championship, but probably a bit more controversial.
But 08,
how are you
going to
rank those five?
The mad drama,
obviously, you're putting 2012 at the top, so I'll put 2003 second.
Okay, I think 21's got to go high, just because
2021 third?
It was incredible. I would take 2021 third.
So 2010, 2008. I'd say 2010 over 08.
Okay.
Although 08 did have a more dramatic finish.
It did, but then Vettel winning it having never led was pretty cool.
Yeah,
that wasn't very thorough. We did talk about it quite earlier, so I hope that's okay.
Exactly. Most underrated F1 driver, past or present, obviously is Julian Palmer, and why would you pick anyone else?
Most underrated...
I would make the argument, I think, is quite a common one to say underrated, has got to be Stefan Beloff. Should have, or definitely could have been an F1 world champion had he not been killed in a sports car crash.
Francois Sever, similar.
Yes, another one.
To be honest, I think James Hunt, not James Hunt, sorry, no, Jim Clark, the other one, not James Hunt.
Jim Clark, two world championships.
And was like ridiculous.
Definitely could have won more.
Yeah,
definitely could have won more. More recent, though, Jamie, certainly not in the same kind of caliber as those guys. I'm trying to think of more like drivers that I think deserve the longest shot in Formula One. I'm going to throw up one that kind of gets completely forgotten about in more recent years. Pascal Wehrlein.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. He kind of got shuffled out of Sauber because Leclerc was the new shiny toy and Alfa Romeo took over, wasn't he? So he was unlucky to not have a
long-term. Which, to be fair, he should have been kept in Mercedes teams. Like, it was between Ocon and Wehrlein to go to Force India, sorry, 2017.
And, Wehrlein was better than Ocon in 16 for the half season they shared. Yeah, I think Wehrlein, because he's done quite... He won an FE championship, did he?
An FE championship, yeah.
Similar vein, I think Jean-Eric Vergne was unlucky to not get a shot outside the Red Bull family. Because Ricciardo
was generally a bit better. And
not a
younger.
Lot better, though. And the fact Vergne absolutely tanked Kvyat in 2014, and then they promoted Kvyat.
And then
Kvyat
got the Red Bull. That was the more injustice for Vergne, yeah.
And I'm not saying Vergne could have gone on and won championships, but he certainly deserved
But in the same way, I'm not sure Pascal Wehrlein would have. It just would have been interesting to see had he got more time. Could he have lost it?
Slightly further back, I think, obviously, Robert Kubica. I mean, he's quite highly rated, to be honest. But
yeah, I would argue, honestly, nowadays, and I know our Polish viewers might hate me for this, but I would argue that he might be slightly overrated.
Possibly.
People forget, after Canada or 08, he only outscored Heidfeld by 1 point.
Well, Nick Heidfeld, the other one, he's massively underrated.
Well, exactly, yeah. Yeah, I know you do. So, there's a few in there. Favourite era of F1, most underrated and overrated? Easy for me, favourite era of F1, I always argue 06 to 2010. Although there were obviously great championship battles in there, I think people don't look back at it enough. Five drivers, five different teams, 5 years with world championships, and kind of that Brawn fairy tale mixed in there as well. The Ferrari versus the McLaren beef. 2010, which of course we spoke about already, I would say was incredible. I hate to say it as well, but the V10 era is probably slightly overrated because a lot of the races were, apart from like 2003, a lot of the racing that back then wasn't that great, and the field spread was massive in some years.
And nobody overtook each other. When you could refuel, people just waited for pit stops.
Yeah. Yeah. For you, Jamie?
I have a real soft spot for the Heidegg Pirelli era when it first started. So
11 through 13.
2011 through Silverstone 13 before they got scared and made the tyres harder. Because, 11, again, not a great season because Vettel was too good. But individual races in that season were incredible. The likes of Canada, China, Hungary, Japan. Yeah, lots of great races in that season. And obviously 2012 we've spoken about. 2013, up until Silverstone, was going to be an incredible title battle. And then four drivers got punctures. And they got really scared and basically gave the title to Red Bull.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, four drivers got punches in one race. They went, Sebastian Vettel, quick, have another one.
And like, because I think after Silverstone, obviously Vettel had a mechanical failure, but I think there was something like 30 points between Vettel, Alonso and Raikkonen.
Yeah.
And it would have been great the rest of the season.
Imagine a Kimi Raikkonen Lotus World Championship.
I don't think Raikkonen would have gone the whole way, but Alonso could.
No, he wouldn't have. But to be fair, actually, you say that, that Lotus was rapid in a few races towards the end
Raikkonen just gave up because he had back surgery, and then Grosjean started getting all the podiums instead.
Well, it's because he wasn't getting paid anymore was the problem.
True. Well, he never really got paid in the first place. He was bankrupted Lotus with a points bonus.
Exactly. Hilarious.
Yeah.
If you had to put the best F1 drivers of all time during their respective primes, which circuit are you choosing? Who are the drivers and who wins? If we're talking about like all out, one driver, one circuit, no one could beat them, I think saying anything other than Senna at Monaco...
I was going to say the same thing.
...would be a travesty. I don't think there has ever been anybody so dominant at one circuit...
Nico Rosberg
...for
at
so
Monaco?
Long. No, that doesn't come close.
No, it would be Senna at Monaco. If you're picking a more conventional circuit, I think someone like Schumacher...
Hamilton at Silverstone has been a mad combo, or Hamilton at Hungary as well.
Schumacher at Magny-Cours, a German
another
track.
Another great one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it, when you kind of look at Verstappen, because he's kind of won quite a few races.
Mexico, Austria.
Mexico and Austria were like the only two I was going to say that you feel like he's properly... dominated.
Well, he's not really a track specialist, is he? He's just a fast driver, so he just wins everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, especially obviously he's one of those drivers as well that called, you know, a bit like Hamilton for so many years as well, where you know a bad track for Hamilton is Monaco because he's only got three wins there at Monaco
and two of them
things like that. Yeah, but you can say the same about Rosberg at Monaco.
Yeah, but I'm not saying Rosberg's one of the greatest drivers of all time, am I?
No, exactly. Exactly. But I think, yeah, if you're going to say one driver, one circuit, no one gets close, it's got to be Senna Monaco, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Six wins. He led something ridiculous, like 280 laps in a row, consecutive.
If you got every driver of all time to race Monaco in their prime, it would be Senna from Graham Hill, genuinely.
If you're just talking Monaco, yeah, I think there's a strong argument to be made there. But if you look at kind of a couple of Graham Hill's Monaco wins as well, a couple of them were down to reliability.
In the 50s or 60s, no way.
Exactly. The next one then comes in from Matthew De Silva. It's the question we all want to know. Jamie, what is your real job that means you get to go on holiday every other week?
Wow, I've been outed. It's a bit of a myth, to be honest.
You go on holiday a lot.
I work for the NHS. In corporate services, in procurement, which I know is really fun. It's got a decent holiday package. I get 28 days plus bank holidays, which is pretty good.
That's the... Basically, plus bank holidays, the legal minimum in this country.
35? No, it's more. It's way more than...
Oh, is it 35? Oh, okay.
As in 28 plus...
I don't know, because obviously I don't get holiday like everybody else.
A lot of places are 28, including my holidays. Where do I get 28?
Yes,
plus,
fair. Right, okay, nice. Yeah.
I just use it wisely. And every time I don't work, I go on a holiday. I also do weekend trips a fair amount.
This is the thing, isn't it? You do quite a lot of... You also, to your credit as well, do quite a lot of budget trips.
Yeah. I just have friends in lots of places.
Yeah, exactly. Jamie's Mr. Worldwide.
Exactly. So this trip to France, for instance, I'm literally paying for flights and a few
He does also live in the north of the UK, which, to put it in context, based on where I live, based on where Jamie's looking to buy a house, you could pretty much get the same house up north for about 60% of the cost down south. It's so hilariously imbalanced in the UK, which is a topic for a whole different podcast.
We could do more podcasts on that, but cheers, Maggie. Well done.
But just living up north is... Especially if you're working in like a massive company, obviously. Well, the NHS is the biggest hire in the country, isn't it?
Seventh biggest hire in the world.
Exactly. Like, there's obviously so obviously living in the north, you're on probably a slightly better wage as such because living is cheaper.
Probably slightly.
So obviously, Jamie's got more expendable income.
I work remotely 4 days a week, so if I want to, I can go to France and work, which I have done in the past. So
exactly.
Don't tell the tax man.
And obviously, I don't know the ins and outs of Jamie's finances as well, but you're also, I would argue from everything I know about you, you're pretty sensible as well.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the things that why we've probably always got on quite well as well is, although I'm well aware that I work in social media, neither of us are particularly image driven.
Not at all. I don't spend any money on cosmetics.
No, exactly. So. he hasn't got a facelift or anything like that yet. Or a nose job.
No, that's coming. I'm not a comedian.
Episode 500, Jamie gets a nose job.
Yeah, incredible. That's enough about me. Let's move on.
Next one is also for you then, Jamie. What would it take for you to come back and beat Matt at an F1 game?
I don't think I could beat you at an F1 game anymore, to be honest.
I think you could if given enough practice.
To be honest,
not that quick.
Even in my prime, I didn't really beat you that much.
No.
We did co-op. No. That was really good fun.
That was...
To be honest, life's move on. I've sold my wheel. I don't really play like games that much other than to relax with my friends. So, I don't know. If there was another pandemic, I would I would come back.
If there was another pandemic, Jamie would come back. What if we get the Gnome Wheel Studio set up properly and we could have like a proper co-op rig set up in the studio?
I mean, I'd be terrible these days. I've not played an F1 game since 2020.
Have you seriously not played an F1 game since then?
I bought 2021 and then never played it because my house didn't have internet for like 3 months, which was brutal.
Fair enough.
Yeah, literally, it's been 5 years.
So what games do you play now? Rocket League. I know you're always on Rocket League, and even when he's meant to be working. NHS,
no,
get on him.
That's not true. and actually online poker, where I don't put money into it. So don't.
Oh, sorry?
Talking about responsibility with money, do not gamble.
Play online poker?
With a bunch of my friends, yeah. We tend
Since
to,
when?
Like 3 months, maybe. It's good fun. I enjoy it a lot. I'm not very good. But yeah.
Yeah, you don't strike me as a poker player. I'm gonna say
I think I'm good is the problem. That's where it all goes wrong.
That's always the biggest problem when it comes to poker. People think they're better than they are.
Exactly.
There you go then. So Jamie will never come back to the F1 games, which is a little bit of a
unless
shame.
We get COVID-20.
Did you never like get into F1 Manager or anything? Because I thought that might be
I played F1 Manager a bit when I was like 17, I want to say, 17, 18. When Motorsport Manager first came out.
Oh, I was going to say, I meant the actual F1 Manager games.
No, I never really got into it. I played a lot of Football Manager when I was younger, but again, don't really play that anymore. So, yeah. And I play fantasy football an awful lot. So I guess
Jamie
that's kind of a game.
Bang on about FPL. I tell you what, he wants to set up a knowing FPL podcast.
This podcast is coming out after the first game week of the season, so Mo Salah, I hope you've delivered.
Fair enough.
If you're listening, please score a bunch of goals.
Oh, sorry. next one then from Isaiah Larson 4365. Which team would you say has the strongest driver academy / program? That is an interesting one, because you would argue Red Bull is kind of the most well known.
You would.
But when you look at drivers, as they've said, Matthew De Silva actually responded to this one going McLaren, which I think is a very good shout.
Who's come through McLaren? Because
they've got Alex Palou. They've got Alex Dunn, Lando. Hamilton came through as technically a McLaren Mercedes, which is...
I would argue
but
Mercedes
we're also are we really going to talk about 20 years ago and talk about
are we talking about now
strongest driver?
I'm just thinking championships
about right now.
Okay, fair.
Yeah,
I mean, right now
it's
probably
the strongest drivers in the pipeline.
It probably is Red Bull, to be honest,
but Red Bull is like so prominent, isn't it? Like when you look at say young drivers and things like that, obviously Red Bull sponsor most of the F2 grid and things like that. Red Bull, like through the late 2000s into the 2010s, had a massive rap sheet. Obviously, you had Seb come through, Max, Daniel. I mean, like, what's his name? Seven of the current drivers were ex or current Red Bull.
Yeah.
Which is mad as well. They kind of seem to have a bit of a dry spell again.
I don't know.
A little bit of...
Like, they've only recently...
Arvid Lindblad is kind of like, there's a lot of hype around him.
Lindblad would be very good. I don't expect Ollie Goethe or anyone else on the Red Bull books to get to F1, but Lindblad will for sure. I don't know. I feel like present day probably has to be Red Bull.
Like I said though, McLaren have got Alex Dunn, Alex Palou.
But I don't think Palou's
obviously Lando's come
F1.
Through in more recent. Palou's not going to get to F1, but he's also won 4 IndyCar championships, which shouldn't be understated.
No. I don't know. And then Mercedes-Benz are responsible for Michael Schumacher and Lewis Hamilton in the last 30 years. So,
yeah. That again, that's a little bit longer term. Also, George and Andrea Kimi Antonelli. It's the big thing, isn't it, of you kind of got two ways driver academies work in the sport. Of Red Bull will kind of throw a lot of money at it and just see what sticks. Mercedes, Ferrari and most of the others will kind of just back a couple of drivers.
Yeah.
And kind of bring them all the way through.
Yeah.
Which is high risk, but also you could argue higher reward.
Yeah. So I guess the problem comes with the Mercedes method is you pick up someone like Fred Vesti who's not quite at the level, and then you're going to effectively
drop. Mick Schumacher.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going to drop 6 years into them just for them to never get to F1, which is a bit of a shame. But
It's a little bit weird. Next one comes in from Dave Langford saying quarter century. Do you know how much a century is? Yeah, I'm a moron last week. I kept saying quarter century
enough.
when it's quarter millennium, which is far more impressive. So I apologize, Dave. You're forgetting the simple fact that I am an idiot. Philip Halstead, 2928. If every race winner suddenly disappeared off the planet, what would the grid look like for 2026?
Oh, gosh.
There'd be so many F2 drivers.
There really would be.
So
I mean, Antonelli
many.
Would still be at Mercedes.
You'd have Antonelli. You'd have
I think they'd probably sign Hülkenberg, to be honest. Oh, no, he's going to be at Audi.
Yeah.
I think Red
that
Bull would
such
have
such a
Hadjar.
Loaded question. Yeah, you'd have to have Hadjar and Lawson, wouldn't you, at Red Bull? Oh, no, Tsunoda, I suppose, could still be there.
Yeah, McLaren, they both, you'd probably stick Alex Dunn in.
You'd put Dunn in.
Are there any F1 drivers who've just recently left? I think Joe would probably make a comeback.
Joe would make a comeback.
Latifi?
Latifi wouldn't, surely. I don't think Sergeant
would.
Well, he's
studying at Masters now, isn't he?
I think more people would gamble on F2. Like you say, you'd lob an Alex Stone in. Leo Fornaroli would finally get a drive. That'd be great to see. Drogovic would get a drive, I would have thought.
Probably Vesti.
Yeah, that's so many
Paul
to try
Aaron.
And go through.
Yeah, there'd be loads. There'd be tons and tons. For what it's worth, Antonelli would probably win the championship.
I think that's easy. Do you reckon he's the best driver in the world not to win a Formula One race, do you?
Well, no, but Hülkenberg's driving a Sauber, so...
Fair enough. Fair enough. Nova the King. Predictions for the last four races of F2 and how the standings will finish. I think Fornaroli is going to win it, just because I want to back Fornaroli as best as I can. Jamie,
thoughts,
champion?
You think
Fornaroli's going to win it? That's bad news, because Jamie gives F2 drivers the kiss of death.
I said that pre-season.
I thought you were just trying to jinx him.
I know, I'm taking that one. I think the Dutch one will fall off. What's it? Vachaur.
Vachaur, yeah.
I think Luke Browning's got a high ceiling. I think Jack Crawford's good. Alex Dunn should be higher than fifth, realistically. He's got quite unlucky in feature races.
He's been
recently
disqualified a few times, yeah.
I think the winners will be between, mostly Fornaroli, Dunn, Browning, and Crawford, as it has been most of the season.
Yeah.
I think Gabriel Mini will probably get a sprint race. I like Mini quite a lot.
Possibly before the end of the year. Thoughts on anything that's been happening recently outside of F1? IndyCar Palau, three-time champion, Rasmussen and Daily Crash, Marquez domination in MotoGP. I cannot stress this enough, ladies and gents. Jamie183 does not watch any other motorsport whatsoever.
I could
talk about quite a few random bits and pieces here and there. Jamie just watches F1 and sometimes Formula 2.
I colloquially follow Le Mans when it's on. I like to see you won Le Mans. That's about it. And I like that Ollie Rowland won in Formula E, because he's from Barnsley.
Yeah,
he's a good guy.
He's a good guy, bless him. But Jamie watches like no other motorsport.
Yeah,
I watch, like I said, I could do podcasts on a few other bits and pieces, but Jamie only watches F1. But I think Palou winning three IndyCar championships, he's doing very, very well. I just don't think he'll ever get an F1 drive, and I don't think at this point he wants one. Marquez domination in MotoGP, honestly, I never expected that to happen again, but I think he's making the firm argument.
Yeah, he was out for a while, wasn't he?
He was out for quite a while, and I think he is firmly making the argument to any, mainly Valentino Rossi fans, that he probably is likely going to end up being the GOAT of MotoGP as well.
What about Nicky Hayden?
He didn't have as much success, but was rapid on his day, as far as I'm aware. Again, I don't know enough about MotoGP to kind of say too much about that kind of thing. Will Work for Food 1?
That's
the
not a
guy
question.
With the Ferrari hat needs to stop making every excuse in the book for Antonelli. Yes, he's been slightly unlucky with mechanical DNS, but in terms of strategy argument, it's his own fault for qualifying so poorly. Not a question, so I'm afraid you're wrong. Mighty Dart 13. Gentlemen, a short view back to the past. 30 years ago, Niki Lauda told us, take a monkey, place him into the cockpit, and he is still able to drive the car. 30 years later, Sebastian told us, I had to start the car like a computer. It's very complicated. And Nico Rosberg said, during the race, I don't remember what race, he pressed the wrong button on the wheel. Question for you both. Is Formula 1 driving too complicated today compared to 20 or more buttons on the wheel? Or are they too much under effort, under pressure? What are your wishes for future concerning the technical program during the race? Less buttons, more, or less or more communication with your engineers? Formula 1 cars right now, Jamie, are far too easy to drive.
Can you just
I've said this
tell
many
me who
times.
The question is too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, can you repeat the question, Dart?
I think, the fact that Brad Pitt could drive one to like 60% of its capacity says quite a lot.
Formula One cars right now, we need to go back. I still think the 2014-16 regulations were slightly underrated because
those cars
were really difficult to draw. Really difficult based on a modern sense to drive. It's why 2008 is one of like the better F1 seasons, because everybody still had groove tires, but suddenly no traction control. Which was
or ABS.
Or ABS, which is hilarious. Yeah. But no, I would make the cars more difficult to control. I was watching, someone did a comparison between Alonso's pole lap at Hungary 09 and his P5 in Hungary a couple of weeks ago. And you kind of forget just how much you used to be able to slot. Like, if you get a moment of oversteer now, it's lap ruined.
The
back then, you really had to hustle the car around.
Because fat tires and loads of downforce. They need to make the cars smaller and less quick, basically.
Exactly. And give us more aggressive power as well. It's always the problem nowadays with Formula 1 is there's just too much data. Like, I wish there was a way you could sensibly limit, like, how much data a team is
allowed.
But it's
a data-driven sport, isn't it? I don't know. I quite like that kind of thing.
Yeah, but it feels like it's a bit too much known as well. But
possibly.
It is what it is. Marius Pack 7447 asks, what's our favourite race to watch? Jamie, you can watch one race back for the rest of the time.
There's quite a few that I want to pick. I genuinely Silverstone 2025 is up there, obviously. Races that I have watched back a load, because I do watch old races from time to time on YouTube, because that's how exciting my life is. I think Brazil 19, where Verstappen won from Gasly, is right up there, because that was a crazy race.
That's a good one.
And also,
not for a Lewis fan or an Albon, but there we are.
Also, Italy 2020, because, Gasly winning that Alfa Tauri. I got goosebumps for, like, the first 25 times watching those highlights back. So
I think there's a few others.
And Abu Dhabi 21 I watched back.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one. I'm going to say there's a few other nominations. Silverstone 24, great race. Obviously, we can't do this without mentioning Canada 2021. 2011 even. 2021, there wasn't even a Canadian Grand Prix.
No.
Brazil 2008, if James allowed Abu Dhabi 21, I'm going to say Brazil 08 as well. I've got to be up there.
Spa 09 always brings a smile to my face.
Spa 08 as well. Great race.
Hamilton's a cheat. But
he's not, but okay.
Spa 09, I was a massive Fizzy fan, actually. The Jordan
Spa 2010 as well was chaos.
The 2003 Jordan is what got me into the sport when I was playing F1 2002 on Xbox. So
yeah.
Fisichella on pole, second place in the Force India.
Fantastic. Any other ones? I'm trying to think from that kind of era as well. Other good races.
Singapore 2016 was a climax like no other when Ricciardo was on the ultra softs chasing down Rosberg on old softs.
Yeah,
and Rosberg held him off. That was a race that was like, okay, Rosberg's actually good enough to win a championship here.
Didn't bottle it under pressure.
No, exactly.
But no, there's so
Saudi Arabia
21
was jokes.
Oh, that was just carnage, wasn't it? That was ridiculous.
One race alone,
Brazil 21.
Brazil 21 was funny as sprint merchant Hamilton, though he wouldn't have got that win if it wasn't a sprint race.
He would
If I had to pick just one, I would probably go for Silverstone 2025, which I know is really recent, but...
Your recency bias is disgusting.
No, it's not.
You're like every modern DTS fan.
That's been the most nervous I've been watching a race live, I think probably ever. Maybe Abu Dhabi 16 was up there as well, but...
Fair enough. Well, if we're going to say that, then I'm also going to be a DTS merchant and say Silverstone 24.
Brazil 19 is a close second, because that race was awesome.
I think genuinely maybe Silverstone 24 is the only time I've unironically cried at a Formula One race.
Fair.
Lewis on the radio after that brought both me and my dad to tears.
Yeah, there were a tear in my eye when Gabby was on the radio to Hulk as well, to be honest.
And our last question then coming from MechZach4. If you had to choose one circuit each to bring back to the Canada, what would they be? Are we talking... I've got two here. Which I know is immediately breaking the question. I'm going to talk one unrealistic and one realistic. First of all, Nürburgring Nordschleife.
Knew that was coming.
Best track in the world. Realistic one. And it's staggering. They are actually talking about it. I don't think it'll happen still. Turkey, Jamie. Turkey might be coming back.
Turkey could replace Madrid. And ever since Madrid got announced, I've been on the bandwagon that it won't race.
It won't happen. Yeah. So I'd love to see Turkey back. I think it would suit the generation as well.
Unrealistic... Arvis with like a 55 degree banking and then just two long straights. Why not? That'd be jokes.
Only Jamie could somehow pick a more deadly Formula One track than the Nürburgring.
And then realistically, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I want it back.
Oh, that's another great shout. Yeah. Another great shout as well.
Yeah. It's a shame that the only good Tilke drones in the last 25 years are the ones that have dropped off the calendar.
Bahrain.
Yeah, Bahrain's good. Yeah, I guess Sochi's gone now as well, which is positive.
So. Yeah, we're starting to cull a few of the bad ones as well, which is good.
Abu Dhabi's been made good as well, so that's helpful.
Abu Dhabi's been made better. It's still not good, but it's better than it was. But there we are then. Thank you, everybody, for all your questions. I think Jamie and I have ended up making this podcast a bit longer than we expected. We apologise that a few of them were kind of a little bit probably too wordy to properly kind of give you the exact answers you wanted. But like we said, of course, if you have got any other questions, leave them down in the comments below. We'll make sure that we'll go through a few of them on next week's show. Jamie, have you got anything else to answer?
I don't think so. No.
No? Thank you all, as always, then. Say, we'll have to do another one of these when we hit 2K in hopefully
in 3 weeks.
The near future. I can't remember when we set up this channel. How long did it take us to get to 1K?
I want
to
say.
Was it, but it was, yeah, May 17th, 2022. Podcast started 21. We picked such a good year to start, especially with the beef between us two.
Yeah, it was great. Those early days, the Jeddah podcast, the Abu Dhabi podcast, were genuinely amazing. Just because it's an hour of back and forth disagreement.
It's just an argument, basically. He was basically just listening to two grown men argue.
But we weren't shouting, which is better than most of Twitter at the time.
Jamie, so. This is the thing, I think, as well. Like, I don't know many of the people that successfully maintain a podcast as a Max and a Lewis fan. not that you'd argue our podcast is successfully maintained, but there we are.
It's also because not rivals anymore, which is helpful.
Fair enough. They kind of are getting there this year.
No, I guess. Not, so. Battle for 11th.
Exactly, yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure you leave a like, get yourself subscribed. A massive thank you again to everybody for 1K subs. And Jamie and I will return then, maybe the end of this week, maybe the start of next week, with more Knowing Wheel.